Anyway. Okay, anyway, good evening, gentlemen. We are continuing in the Rambam, Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Hey, Halacha Vov, Chapter 5, Law 6. And that's in the Maznaim text on page 238 and 239. We're continuing to discuss the laws of honoring and fearing your rabbi, who's your Rabbi Mufhak, yes. The one you've learned the most Torah from. And with God's help, we will finish the Perek tonight. Or with your help, we won't finish the parak tonight. One of the two. They're both fine. V'chein lo yachlotz tfilov lifnei rabo. You should not take off your tefillin in front of your Rebbe. Now, the Gemara in Sanhedrin really mentions that regarding a king. But even though whatever laws with a king, a chacham comes before a king. So, therefore, it fits the same thing over there. Rabbanim are also called kings, because we already brought a pasuk before, it says, Bi malachim yimlochu, etc., etc. So, and there's, Shulchan Aruch brings down exactly that. You don't take your tefillin off in front of your Rebbe, whatever. So, it's not respectful to take your tefillin off in front of him. So, I don't know what you guys would do. Where do you take him off?
You'll have to leave there.
He does. He leaves the room.
Yeah, he puts his phone on.
I wait till you leave before I take him off. I
assume it works the other way around, too.
Okay. Anyway, that's a tricky one. V'lo yasev, you don't recline in front of your Rebbe. That would be, for example, the Seder. If you're having your Seder in front of your Rebbe, you don't recline. That's freedom. That's freedom, and you don't act free in front of your Rebbe.
You're to say to when you're don't go to your
Rebbe. You'd have to ask permission. You have to ask permission.
If the rabbi says, okay, everyone should recline.
If the rabbi's saying everybody can recline, then he's giving you permission. Then that's fine, but you got to get permission. That's as you'll see. You'll see there's going to be a halacha then that almost knocks everything off that we've learned. You'll see. Just hang on. But you'll see why this is allowed. But the pure law is you can't recline in front of your Rebbe. Ela Yoshev ki Yoshev v'melech. You sit as if you're sitting in front of a king. That's how you have to be in front of the Rebbe. Lo yispalel lo lifnei rabo. You don't pray in front of your rabbi. Okay, this is all so you don't look like you're arrogant. All these next few lines now. Velo lacha rabo, not right behind your Rebbe. Velo betzad rabo, not next to your Rebbe. Now, right away, the commentaries tell us that this prohibition is only if you're within 4 amas of your Rebbe. So that's within 8 feet of Rabbi. Now you know why nobody sits in the front row in a lecture.
They've all learned this a lot.
From davening. You stay far away from the Rebbe, 8 feet away from the Rebbe. That's why, you know, I don't think nobody doesn't like me. They're all keeping the halachas. You want to stay far away. Also, it only applies when you're praying biyachidus and not in shul, in a communal prayer. So this all does not apply by communal prayers. So let's say you're davening biyachidus, whatever. You don't have a minion, whatever.
So what's that word?
By yourself,
individually. Let's say you're on a...
It's just the two of you there.
Yeah, two of you. Three of you, five of you. Not a minion. You're davening together, so you don't sit within 4 amas of the Rebbe. Don't daven within 4 amas. That shows you're on the same level. Right, so it's not really applicable. That's according to the Beis Yosef.
I was counting, yes.
Really commonly in shuls you'll have where, you know, you have the seat on the bima, right? Or the
front
will sit by himself.
Yeah, that's just...
Is that also for this reason?
It could be for that reason as well. I mean, there is an idea of having the prestigious people on the Mizrach wall. That is a prestigious thing, so obviously the rabbi is going to be there. But the way, you know...
I noticed that you sit with us on Shabbos on the same table. We're all...
It all doesn't apply.
Communal.
Doesn't apply. Communal. It's all communal.
It's only when you hit it.
Shouldn't there be some sort of separation?
Listen, if you're diving in a cafeteria, it's all, right?
Yeah, but shouldn't we make some sort of elevation, some sort of difference there?
You know what? It's too much work
for
Sid to do every week. I mean, I have the front spot closest to the Aron HaKodesh, so that's about as honorable as it's going to get. And it's just the logistics is make people crazy. You have to move the front table forward.
Brace Franklin, everything's the same except there's one really fancy chair for Rabbi Zirkind. He brought like a wood fancy chair.
So that's very nice, but I don't know anywhere where it says a rabbi has to have a fancy chair. And if we had a fancy chair, where would we store? We have no room in the storage room as this. I still don't know if we have the Aron HaKodesh in the storage room. So we don't have any room for anything, so we're going to make a fancy ornate chair. It's a moichel on it. It's okay. I appreciate your thoughts, Howard. I understand you want to donate a fancy chair for me.
You're thinking of a really nice blow-up chair.
Listen, I have during the week. I have a nice tender over there. It's nice. Very nice, you know. I don't know. If you want to give me a nice chair over here, okay, maybe we can discuss that.
Really?
Howard.
Not a blow-up chair.
No, you know, one like
as long as those things don't happen on that.
Well, we could do that, you know, put that in the fundraising, you know, for $50,000, you know.
Or I could still rep a Zerkheim's chair.
Yeah, okay, anyway.
He can't use a gear.
So now, we're up to the Ein Tzarich Lomar, and all the more so, also Lahalich Betziu. You shouldn't walk next to your rabbi. El Yisrachik Lach Rebbe, you should be at a distance behind your rebbe, obviously more than four amas. And again, if he gives you permission, that's okay. And he shouldn't be directly behind him. Okay. And then you daven. In other words, you don't go right behind him and then daven. Now also, you don't go with your Rebbe into the bathhouse, because again, you have to give him certain respect, unless the Rebbe is elderly and needs someone to help him to go into the mikvah.
What about the Arizal's mikvah in Israel?
Yes.
Okay, so just hold on. Okay, you shouldn't sit in the place where your Rebbe normally sits.
That's right.
Okay, it says it by your father, all the more so by your Rebbe. And you don't adjudicate things before him. What does that mean to say? Let's say your Rebbe and another Chacham are having an argument in Halacha. So you don't take, say, I think the other rabbi is correct.
Oh,
like that.
Boy.
All right? Below Yister is Dvarv, and you don't correct him, and you say, you know, you're wrong, Rebbe. This is what you're supposed to do. Below Yeshev Lefanov, and you don't sit in front of him, Achyom lo shave until he tells you to sit. Below Yamad Milfanov, Achyom lo emol, you don't stand in front of him until he tells you to stand. You don't move until he tells you what to do. Oh, Achyitol Rishus Lamed, or until he gets permission to stand. So either way, Ukshiyapat Merabah, and you take your leave from your Rebbe, Below Yasu Achav, you don't turn your back on him. You go backwards. Punav can I get punav? And your face is opposite his face. So it's like when you leave a shul, you should leave in front of your Rebbe. I guess that's when your Rebbe is like sitting in a particular place. So these are all aspects of different aspects of kavod you have to give him. Halacha Zayin continues the same idea. You have to stand up when you see your Rebbe coming from a distance as far away as your eye can see. And if he passes by, you have to stay standing until he is covered from you. You can't see him, for you're a kamaso, and you can't see his figure, his silhouette, or whatever, and you can no longer see him. Then you can sit down. That's the same halacha for Sefer Torah. It's the same halacha for Sefer Torah. And a person is obliged to greet his Rebbe at the three holidays, Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos. You go and visit your Rebbe. Now that already is a big discussion amongst the rabbis. It's a big machlokas in the Gemara, where there is a whole, it says, v'samachta ata v'secha, so it's a whole discussion over there, and I think your English gives a very good treatment of this. Mine doesn't give as much of it. They tell the whole story over here at Gemara Sukkah, right above 241. It says, Rabbi Loy went to visit his teacher, Rabbi Lezer, in Lod during a festival. And he told him, the Rebbe said, Aloy, you are not one of those who rests on the festivals. It means to say, I see you're not resting on the festival. What does that mean? So Rabbi Lozer would say, I praise the lazy ones who do not leave their home during the festivals, because it's written, and you shall rejoice on your festivals. There's a mitzvah to make your family happy. So if you go away from your family, they're not going to be happy. So certain rabbis were critical. So what are you coming to me for? You're supposed to be with your wife and kids. Don't come to me. Right? And that's what it says. That is unacceptable, because Rabbi Yitzchak taught, what is the source of obligation? A person has to visit his teacher on a festival. But on the other hand, there's those who say, you have to see a Rebbe. We learned this from the story with Elisha. When the Shunamis came, it says, why are you coming to him? The Shunamis wanted to go, told her husband, I want to go to the prophet. It says, why do you want to go to him today? It's not a day of rest or a new moon.
Yeah.
Right? From this we can infer that on a day of rest and new moon, a person is obligated to visit his teacher. Gemara says, that's not a question. The latter applies when he can go back and forth on the same day. In other words, they were saying, if you can visit your Rebbe and come back home, you can do both, then you can do both. But if you only do one, that rabbi says you shouldn't do this.
Could I ask about
so
the
one second.
Chum Yom Tov?
Well, obviously, if you can't go past the Chum, you can't go past the Chum.
Well, that's
a large,
more than a day. That's a more
what's
than
a
day's
large
travel.
City. How about Toronto?
Okay.
From one end, from all the way of Thornhill, all the way to the lake, would take how long?
To the lake?
You can make it in one day.
And back.
Oh.
Right? I don't think... So if your Rebbe was in a downtown shul, right, and you're up in Richmond Hill... I don't think it's going to happen, right?
No, that would be
so you see from that Gemara, that whole Gemara seems to say really you should stay home and not go to the Rebbe unless you can go back and forth both ways. However, the Rambam says, learns other rabbis' statements, in the simple way you have to go, because another other stories in the Talmud where students would visit the Rebbe during a holiday. So then he brings down the note of Yehuda and a tshuva, says that this law is not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch at all, or the Torah. The codifiers do not bring down this law, so therefore the note of Yehuda says, because it only applied when we had a Beis HaMikdash. In other words, when you had a Beis HaMikdash, you had to visit Hashem three times a year. So if you visit Hashem three times a year, you visit your Rebbe also at the same time. But if now... but now if there's no Beis HaMikdash, you go to your Rebbe, then it seems that the Rebbe has more sanctity than the Beis HaMikdash has. Because we don't go to the Beis HaMikdash, you go to your Rebbe. And that's why Rabbi Huda is suggesting, yes, maybe there is a halacha. In the olden days, we had a Beis HaMikdash to go visit your Rebbe. But if there is no Beis HaMikdash, you don't visit your Rebbe. However, this opinion Rabbi Huda does not accept for everybody. And many, again, Talmudic sources that said that a person should visit his Rebbe was in the times of Talmud after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So they said you should do that anyway.
Yeah, because couldn't it be seen as a substitute for when we don't have the Beis HaMikdash?
Well, you can never substitute the Beis HaMikdash,
no,
right?
I mean, it's like how we dove in.
So therefore, there is the best way to come out is if you could see the experience. The Hasidim, for example, my mother, Aloha Shalom, was always say, her father was a Ger Chassid. He came from Ger Chassidim, and I forgot which Yom Tov, not all the Yom Tovim, but there's certain Yom Tovim, all the Chassidim went to Ger.
Yeah.
And
there's a train. They say that was
all
one of the
ladies. All the ladies in Pabianitz, you know, there were no men in Pabianitz in that city because all the husbands were in Ger, and they take the younger boys, and they all went to Ger. I don't remember which holiday, but there's certain holidays. Probably, I guess it would be Simchas Torah would make sense. With maybe Shavuos also, you find all the Hasidic stories. They all went to the Rebbe's. So obviously they felt after the Makabel Panim of the Rebbe, and you know, forget about the wives.
They leave obviously for a 2-day Yom Tov before the Yom Tov. Right?
They left for like a week. What do you think? You think it were next door? It could take a couple of days to get there.
Well, you know, they say though the train from Warsaw to Ger was the busiest line in all the Polish railway, Mamish,
okay.
By far. Was very, very popular.
So you see that there are people till today do that.
They took the
trade. So, you know, had to be makabel pun. I mean, truthfully, if you daven in the same shul as him, you're yaitzeh, so it's not a problem. Yeah. You just have to show your face. So you show your face, come to a class. You're yaitzeh, be makabel pun. We're talking about a guy's Rebbe, the guy lives out of town. Let's say a guy went to the yeshiva by his Rebbe for 10, 15 years. He's his Rebbe. So now he should come for Yom Tov. So if he can come to, he can be by his family, he can do both, that would be great. Now remember, Yom Tov is 7 days. Let's say Sukkot, Pesach. So if he can go one day, the Rebbe, then come back the next day, that already would be fine. Yeah.
Can I ask, when a Rav comes into the room, then we get up, but then we sit down, you know, relatively quickly.
That's what I want.
And the Rambam seems to imply that you would have to remain standing
until he comes to a stop.
Like, until he says, "You can sit down." Like when the Sefer Torah comes.
Is it until he comes to a stop?
Or he could be moichel on it.
But typically, at least I've never observed where.
Well, what normally happens when the rabbi comes? He comes to the podium. You
right,
stand up.
Stand.
And when he gets to the podium, stop. Once he's not moving, it's like a Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah is broad. Once it comes to the bima, even if you haven't put it down, you can sit down. As long as Torah is not moving anymore, you can sit. So the same thing if the Rebbe comes into the room and he's standing. He's not sitting, but he's not moving. Right. So you could sit down. So usually when he comes to speak, right? Let's say you call so-and-so to speak. Right. He gets up. And you, but then again, that's not your Rebbe. Most of these people are not your Rebbe. Rabbi so and so.
It's only to your.
It's your Rebbe.
No, but all in the cafe when the rabbi comes to give the drash.
Okay, so Mark again, not everybody feels that I'm their Rebbe Muvach.
Well,
that's the
take a snapshot. Many people feel they have no rabbi.
That's right. No, they are the rabbi.
No, they are the rabbi. Yeah. Yes.
Or they're connected to somebody from 300 years ago, and that's their rabbi.
Yes, it's okay.
They don't have to worry about standing.
Moshe Feinstein rules very strongly against that.
Anyway, okay, let's move on. Okay, Ches. Ches. Okay, Ein Cholkin Kovod LeTalmud Bifnei Rabbi. You can't give honor to a rabbi student in front of the rabbi himself. Unless you see the rabbi himself gives honor to the student himself. Okay, because the rabbi gives him Kovod, then certainly he's happy that other people should give him Kovod. Oh, here's a good one now. Anything that a servant, meaning a Canaanite slave, does for his master, Talmid Osel Rabbo, a student does for his Rebbe. That includes, and not restricted to, washing his feet, putting on his shoes, taking off his shoes. Those are all the things that a Canaanite servant does. So that's what a Talmud should do for his Rebbe. V'imhoya b'makom she'ein makir noso. So what if you'd be in a city where people don't recognize the rabbi or the student? Let's say the student's going with his rebbe and they're going to another city. Nobody knows them. It's a place where they don't recognize him. He's not having his tefillin on when he's doing this. V'chosh shema yomer. Now he's concerned. They're going to say, Evidu is an Evid Kanani. Because he's acting like an Evid Kanani. So then, so you don't have to put on and take off his shoes. Lest people will cast aspersions on the man and think he's a Canaanite. Right? If you're in your own city and everybody knows who you are, then they know you're honoring your Rebbe. But otherwise, you could think he's a candidate. Now look at this one now.
What's the point? Sorry to interrupt.
We're going to get to the point.
No,
but no, because you have to fill out. Then you don't know you're never Canaanite.
You're not a Jew. You're not a Jew. You don't know you're a Jew.
Let's say you have a regular black kapelush. So a goy wears a kapelush, a Jew wears a kapelush, right? Those hats, you know? So you go in and do all the things that a Canaanite servant does. We don't think he's a Canaanite.
Yeah, you
and then later on, they're going to hear a shidduch from this guy's daughter for you because what are these? A Canaanite. I don't want to marry him in the family. So he could, if he's wearing tefillin, then you could put his shoes and take them off.
Should be doing those tasks while you're wearing tefillin.
So we talked about that yesterday morning. We talked about, remember, we said yesterday morning, someone asked, who was that? It wasn't, was it? I think it was Rav Shach. Remember, somebody asked, I think it was Rav Shach. Asked Rav Shach, there was a lawyer who, he always would learn a few hours every morning with his tefillin, every morning. However, if sometimes people would come in with just for some wordings on a contract for 3-4 minutes, he would stop his learning for that.
And he learned till 12.
But he took his tefillin off before he would do that. So he mentioned it, I think it was to Rav Shach. I could be wrong who he mentioned it to. I think it was to Rav Shach. So Rav Shach says, I want you to know, the truth of the matter is, even if your tefillin would be off, and the guy would come with the contract, you should put your tefillin on. Why? Because then you're going to do the contract 100% the way you should be doing. Because really, you're supposed to wear tefillin on all day long.
Right.
And the tefillin sets the tone for how you look at the contract as a Jew looks at it.
Touching one's shoes.
So the same thing, like that, you're touching somebody else's shoes. You're putting on his shoes. You could wash your hands.
But you're serving your Rebbe.
We'll see all that, but that's important. Now look what it says next. And any Rebbe who prevents his servant, his student from serving him, Monea mimenu chesed. He keeps away from him. He's not doing kindness to him. Uporek mimenu yir shemaim, and he is taking away from him fear of God.
Whoa.
Okay. Now he will explain in a minute. V'chol Talmud. Okay, so let's explain this. So the Rambam in Hilchos Deis, if you remember, that a Talmud Chacham is distinguished not only with his intellectual achievements, but also in his midos, the way he behaves all the time. So a student, what does a student learn from his Rebbe? He learns Torah from his Rebbe. He also has to learn how to behave. How's he going to learn how to behave unless he hangs around his Rebbe all the time and does things for him, and he serves him, as it were. And if you're able to serve him, right, that's how you get to see the total behavior of the Rebbe.
Wasn't that with Moshe, Yehoshua and Moshe?
Right? And more than that, it makes you more subservient to the Rebbe and makes you able to understand his Torah better. Can't remember which Gemara it is now. There was a particular Gemara that Rebbe was, one of the rabbis in the Gemara was saying a halacha, and the student asked him a very hard question, like a reason, why? You know, he wants to know why. Rebbe says, okay, first, go serve me first. Go take my shoes off or put something on and do something.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you the answer. So what do you do that for? The answer is, it was such a hard answer, the student would have to subjugate his mind so much to the Rebbe. He says, first subjugate your body, so then maybe you can subjugate your mind to understand what I'm saying. So that's also part of it, that the student has to be a sponge. So you have to totally give yourself over to the Rebbe. So that's the advantage of, as Gemara says, Godol Shimusha Yoser Milimuda. Greater is the benefit you get by serving your Rebbe than from learning from the Rebbe. That's assuming you have a Rebbe who's of the highest character, that you mamish are learning a lot from him by serving him and being such intimate exposure to him. Finally, it says, V'chol Talmud shemezalzel davar mikol kovod rabo, any student who denigrates any of this honor to his Rebbe, goyrim l'shchina shistalik miyisrael, he causes the divine presence to leave the land of Israel. Because why? You've diminished the honor of the Rebbe. Once the Rebbe's honor is diminished, then Jews are not going to respect him and not going to develop that connection to Hashem. All right. Halacha test. Now, how do you correct the Rebbe if he makes a mistake? Ra Rabba Over Al Divrei Torah. Let's say he sees his Rebbe's doing a transgression. Omer Lo. So he says, he doesn't say, you're making a mistake, Rabbi. You say, Limadatana Rabbeinu Kavach. I remember the Rebbe once taught us this halacha. I think the Rebbe taught us not to do this, right? So that way, you're giving him the respect, right? And they bring many stories of the Gemara that says that. So you just say, or you could read the Pasuk, say, you know, you come up with a chumash, and you come with Mishnah Berurah and say, Rebbe, I don't know how to learn this halacha. Can you explain to me this halacha? Please help me with the halacha. The Rebbe forgot. So explain this Gemara to me. I don't understand it. And, you know, that's the... that's one way of having him see his own mistake himself, so he'll chop. You know, it's and it happens. I had once one of my Rosh Yeshivas when I was in my year of Avelus, so I was mamish learning all the laws of it. I was probably 18, 19 years old, and I learned all the laws of Avelus very quickly. And a couple months later, one of the Rosh Yeshivas said good morning to me. So afterwards, I was like terrified. I just went over. I said, I'm not sure. Maybe I didn't learn the halacha correctly. But it says in the Gesher Chaim that one should not greet a mourner with a good morning. It says, "Oi, I forgot. Thank you for telling me." So it's scary to do that. You're afraid they're gonna bite your head off. But so they have to say it in a respectful way that you're not showing that you don't know what you're talking about. So I kind of said, like, did I learn the halacha right? I'm not sure. The Gesher Chaim says, are we noheg that way? Sometimes opposed to excessive, but maybe we don't keep that. Sometimes the Mishnah Berurah says, and we don't hold like the Mishnah Berurah. Right. So I was asking. He said, oi, I forgot. You're right. I made a mistake. So, okay. So it happens. V'chol zman shemaskir shmua befonov. Whenever you mention anything that the Rebbe taught you in front of his face, you're saying the halacha, or whatever statement he said, a teaching that the Rebbe said in front of his face, Omer Lo, he says, Kach limadetanu Rabbeinu. This is what our Rebbe taught us. Okay? In other words, you don't say it yourself. You say, this is what the Master, I'll say over something, Rebbe, that you said. Right? This is what the Master, you give him credit, especially in front of him. Val yomer dover shlo shama me rabo. And if you're not in front of the Rebbe, you can't say halacha stamazoi until you say whose name it is. In other words, let's say you're a student of Rabbi X. So you usually should, now you have a couple options. So if you're in front of the Rebbe, you have to say, Rebbe, you have taught us this, you've said this and this. If you're not in front of your Rebbe, and you're saying what your Rebbe said, you don't have to say in the name of your Rebbe. You know why? Because everybody knows he's your Rebbe. Whatever you say is what he taught
in
you.
In those days.
You had one Rebbe. That's it. So you just say, everybody knows the student's just quoting the Rebbe. Yeah. Because you'd be saying it every minute. My Rebbe said this, my Rebbe said this, my Rebbe said this. He's a student of Rebbe. You're only going to say what a Rebbe says. Now the question is like this. What if the guy heard something from a different rabbi? And now he's going to be quoting a different rabbi. He says, then you can't say it when you're not in front of your Rebbe now. Remember, in front of your Rebbe, you got to say what your Rebbe said and say his name. But now if you're not in front of your Rebbe, if you're saying from what the Rebbe said, you don't have to say anything because you know it's him. But what if you're quoting from a different rabbi? then you have to say the different rabbi, or people will think that that's your Rebbe's position when it's not his position, and then they're going to figure what's going on. He's contradicting himself. I see your student was quoting you, but it really wasn't. It was a different rabbi he's quoting. So you have to be careful then to mention the other rabbi so that people will not make the mistake. In other words, the default when you're not in front of your Rebbe is to say nothing, and people know it's from your Rebbe. If you're going to say something that wasn't from your Rebbe, then you got to go out of your way and say whose name it is from. Now, Ukeshiyamos Rabbo, when his Rebbe dies, Korea Kol Begodav, you cut all your garments, Achumagasim, until you reveal your heart. That's exactly what you do for a father. Veinu Ma'achel Oilam, and you don't sew it up ever again.
Ever.
So that would be exactly like your father.
Yeah.
Be exactly like your father. Okay. So we. Now, nowadays, generally speaking, we do not do this anymore. We do not do this anymore. And it's very interesting. There's a Lecha Mishnah that has a big, big leniency. And it's a big leniency that many people follow, is that he says, presently, there really isn't very much applicable of a Rebbe Muvhak, a main Rebbe, because nowadays we have a lot of books. In the olden days, you could only learn from a Rebbe. You couldn't learn from a book. Those weren't books. But now you got so many books, you could be reading more from books than from a Rebbe. So there is such an opinion that since we get most of our knowledge from books, the concept of Rav Muvhak does not apply, period. So that's why, and it's kind of a melamed zchus, judge people favorably, why we don't see people giving all this honor. So there is such a leniency. Okay? Now, again, as you see, what the Rambam himself says, and also ve'enam achal olam, and under those circumstances, when you would rip your garment, you don't sew it back together. Again, it's just like a parent. A parent, you rip it, you don't sew it back. But b'med remember, when do we say this? B'rabba muvak, when he is indeed his Rebbe muvak. Now, only now, this is the first time we came across the word Rabba muvak in the Rambam.
Yeah.
Right? Every time he just said Rabbo, right? If I'm not mistaken. Now the Rambam finally is saying, what kind of Rebbe are you talking about? The Rabbo Muvhak. Muvhak, the translation means that causes you to shine, to illuminate. So he illuminates you, and you become illuminated through him. That's what the idea of a Rebbe Muvhak. We say it means your main Rebbe, but it means from the word Mavhik is to illuminate. And that's what Rambam says. Shalom Eimena Rov Chachmas. You learned most of your wisdom from him. You didn't learn most of your wisdom from him. Harei Zeh Talmud Chaver. Then you're called a student colleague. You don't have to give all this kind of honor we've been talking about till now. You have to give him regular respect, but you don't have to give him more. So now it seems a little bit of a contradiction now. So if you're not the big Rebbe, so Avol Oymed Lefonov, you stand before him, Vekareyalov, and you rip, Kishem Shkreya Al Kol Mason Shimzalim. So here's a big problem here. You rip, not, seeming to say, not as much as others, but like anybody else you mourn for. So I guess maybe, but not parents.
Right.
That are not your fathers. In other words, you only rip one garment and not over your heart, not to expose everything. So, afilo mamad elo davar echad. Even if it went one thing, ben kut megadol, whether it's a big thing or small thing, omen will fun require of you to rip. So he says, so if he's not your Rebbe Muvhak, you just do a one rip. As if for a relative who's not a parent. Again, it's not very noheg nowadays. We generally don't do that. You will find if somebody really had a Rebbe who really was his close Rebbe, then you'll find that they will rip, just not like a father, but they'll just rip one. You know, if, let's say, there are those who would, let's say, Rav Moshe's closest students.
Yeah.
So they would do Kriya. If they mamish felt like every time that a shayla, they asked him a shayla, and they got was for the Rebbe. So they would cut, but not as a parent, that you cut everything to expose the heart, but just cut for that. Okay, and yeah, question?
I'm just wondering about this, sort of the whole issue of mentioning what your rabbi taught to somebody else, and how that compares to what we discussed last night about not giving an opinion when your rabbi's in the room. Are you allowed to tell someone that I heard from our rabbi if you share?
You could say it's Dvar Torah. Let's say it's Dvar Torah. Dvar Halacha.
Yeah.
I say, you know, let's say, what are you learning? We're learning about Yishalom Yas. Well, you know, this is the understanding of what it's all about. So that's what your Rebbe taught you. This is how you understand
it. If someone asks, what bracha do I make on this, can you say, well, I learned from the rabbi that you make this
bracha?
Well,
no, if the Rebbe's there, again, if it needs thinking, right, and your Rebbe did all the thinking, then you should say, you know, go to my Rebbe. There's a different aspect. There's saying over a piece of Torah from your Rebbe, and there's paskining halacha.
I see.
That's a different thing. Paskin halacha, you don't paskin halacha from your Rebbe, unless it's mamish, the simplest halacha.
But let's say
it's a complicated thing, right? Complicated thing, you know. Do you make a bracha when you take your tefillin off? Do you make a bracha when you come back, right? So you don't ask Rabbi so-and-so,
right? That's what I said,
but if it's what bracha on an apple, what bracha on an apple, then bird breaks, because everybody knows it's bird breaks. But if you're saying over a shiur, let's say a piece of Torah, let's say something we said between Mincha and Maariv.
All right?
See, you could say it over, and if you always quote everything from your Rebbe, you could say it over. You're not saying a halacha. You're saying a Dvar Torah. So Dvar Torah, you can say this thing. It's not a problem. Yeah.
If you don't mind, two things I want to ask you. One is that when you're quoting, you made the comment that when the Talmud is quoting his Rebbe, it's assumed that he's quoting...
It's a Talmud Muvak.
Yeah.
If he has a lot of Rebbes, you couldn't do that.
Right. But you're assuming when he's giving over a piece of Torah that it's... He's quoting from the Rabbi.
Yeah, you know, like you find that, for example, a lot of guys who were guys who really learned by Rabbi Yosher Beer Soloveitchik, right? Mm,
yeah.
It's like whatever they, you know, like certain political views, halachic / political views, you know, that's Rav Soloveitchik or Rav Cook or Briskerov. You know, it's like you know that the Briskers always do this. They're always machmer about this. You know? Yeah. So you don't have to say you know that that's the kind of, you know, background that they have. Yeah.
So my question is, how did it enter that, for example, you know, people, obviously, when Moshe Rabbeinu gave something over, you know, it was clear, but then somehow, centuries later, we've got this opinion.
All the machlekesim, right? All the machlekesim, different opinions. There's 70 faces to the Torah.
Yeah.
There's 70 ways to understand every halacha.
But wasn't there at the beginning one opinion, or did Moshe give all the machlokas?
He could have given a lot of opinions, but they said what the psak is, but then when he got to Hillel and Shammai, then all of a sudden the machlokasim became unbelievable. So at that point in time, you have to be careful.
But isn't it because we forgot?
It's not only forgetting, it was spreading out of Torah, it was expansion of Torah. It wasn't just forgetting, it was expansion of Torah in a way that was just incredible, and there was expansion of the Jewish people's psyches were expanding and into all different ways.
So that sounds like a positive thing.
Yes, not
positive and negative.
Yeah, both. both. So that's when you have to start quoting your Rebbe.
Second question is with regards to the issue Paul raised. What happens if somebody asks you something who's unaffiliated? They're a secular Jew or. And they're asking you a question. Obviously, if it's something that's a complicated nature, you would say...
I would say you could answer, because we really mean, we're talking about when people are in a kehillah.
Right.
Someone in the kehillah, a shiloh, you're supposed to say, you go to the rabbi.
This guy isn't
the secular guy, he's not going to come to me.
That's right.
I'm not his rabbi. He would never come to a rabbi. So then you would answer him, because... It's not a question of covet.
For example, I will get asked around Yom Kippur time. You know, I've got this disease and that disease, and it's a secular guy, right?
Should I
so
fast?
Often, I mean, I won't husk, and I will say, you know, is there anybody who you can ask? Like,
so if he doesn't have a rabbi to ask, then you can either, if you don't know the answer, you call a rabbi and he'll give you the answer. Or if you've already had this question many times, you just tell him the answer.
Okay.
Because it's not impinging on the rabbi's honor, because that guy doesn't go to shul.
Mm. Okay, so those people are... Okay.
Then that's
in my situation, I was supposed to tell this person to ask their own rabbi, because I know they're part of
the
community.
Because they have a rabbi. Okay, shkoyach, guys.